So while I'm setting up, I'll just talk about this background picture. It's taken in this past season at the South Pole. What is really cool about it is that it's a double sun dog. So you see one ring around the telescope, and then if you stare, squint enough, then you see like a second ring. Like around here, yeah. So these are like rainbow effects. But then the refraction is done by ice crystals in the atmosphere. So I thought it's pretty cool. But I won't be talking much about ice crystals in this talk. So I'm Kimmy Wu. I'm a postdoc at the University of Chicago. Thank you very much to the organizers for this invitation to give a talk here. And I'll be covering topics on observational tensions in non-Euclidean with an angle from SPT. So my goal of this talk is to summarize the state of knowledge of the interpretations of SPT data to inform model building that attempts to resolve tensions in lambda CDM. So it's a selection of what we find so far given our data, and hopefully you'll take away bits and pieces that will be useful for you to build models to resolve this tension. So, South Pole Telescope, it is a 10-meter telescope located at the South Pole. So this here is the telescope. This is the aperture is large, so we're able to make high-resolution observations of the millimeter wave sky. These are people for scale. And at 150 gigahertz, the resolution is about one arc minute. So that's actually a highest resolution CMB telescope out there in operation. The current camera on SPT observes at three frequencies, 90, 150, and 220 gigahertz. So 90, 150 are the CMB workhorse bands, 220 are good for foreground monitoring, and with three different bands, we can do some component separation to separate foregrounds out from CMB. And our current camera has the largest number of detectors, about 16,000 detectors in a single receiver. What that means is that we can make really deep millimeter wave observations at a short period of time. So what this sky map shows is the background is a dust map, shows is three different footprints of the three different CMB surveys that we have conducted using the South Pole Telescope. The key point here is that because we're a ground-based telescope, we don't observe the entire sky. But we select low foreground patches for our observations. And I'll talk more about different surveys that we have performed. So why the South Pole? This is an aerial photo of the South Pole station on the left. This is where SPT is. This distance is about a kilometer. So it turns out the South Pole is an extremely good site for millimeter wave observations. So there are a few reasons. One is that it is extremely dry. Water vapor in the atmosphere is terrible for millimeter wave observations. So the drier your site is, the better your observations are. Second is it is at a high altitude, about 10,000 feet above sea level. What it means is that the amount of atmosphere above you is thinner, so you see through less water vapor. And finally, the sun only sets and rises once at the South Pole every year. What it means is that there is no daily modulation of heating up and cooling down the atmosphere that can degrade your data quality. So we have a few, we have done a few SPT surveys. So on the big color with the CMB fluctuations map here is SPDS-Z, that's our first generation camera. And then on this smaller blue square is SPT Pole, that's about 500 square degree. On the sky. So these two surveys are finished and that are in the can. And currently we are observing this patch. It's a 1500 square degree patch with our newest camera, SPT-3G. And I'll preview some of the current data analysis efforts and some forecasts on H0 from 3G. But I'll be focusing on results from SPT-SZ and SPT-Pole. To give you a sense of what high-resolution observation means, I'll show you maps from Planck versus SPT on the same patch of the sky to just give you a sense of what it looks like. So this is a small patch of the sky, 50 square degrees. This is the size of the moon for scale. This is what Planck would see at 143 gigahertz. Now I'm going to flip to what SPT Paul sees on the same patch of the sky. Right, so it is about six times deeper, and your eye can pick out the smaller scale fluctuations on the maps. It also has six times finer angular resolution at 150 gigahertz compared to Planck at 143. So what it means is that the small fluctuations like point sources and galaxy clusters can be seen from the SPT telescope. I thought that's extremely cool. Now, with these low noise and high resolution maps, we can then make precision measurements of small scale fluctuations. So what I've shown here is a E-mode polarization power spectrum from a few different experiments. I'd like you to focus on the Planck points and the SPT pole points. So that's the cyan band powers with error bars and the dark red points with error bars. So what this arrow shows is that it divides the band powers that are better measured from Planck versus SPT Paul. What's really cool with these high resolution measurements is that we now have access to angular scales that are inaccessible by Planck. And the implication for that is we can test consistency of cosmological parameters inferred from these small scale fluctuations and ask the question of whether it is consistent with the prediction from large angular scales. And if you remember Lloyd's talk this morning, is that, oh, everything's consistent and CNM is still right and it's boring. But maybe not. Maybe we are seeing some departures at small scales. But right now we don't, I'll take the punchline. It's right now we don't quite have the statistical precision on these scales to quite differentiate between what we're seeing on the large scale and the small scale yet. But it will be really curious going forward. Now, back to the big elephant in the room of the Ishinot tension. Say, if the Ishinot tension is due to Planck systematics, we know that systematics cannot resolve the whole tension, but it is a useful exercise to compare against independent measurements of the CMB. So we did that using SPD-SZ data. So what we did is we want to compare mode by mode on the same patch of the sky the CMB fluctuations in temperature. So we pick 6% of the sky here, and we constrain ourselves to the same angular scales that are well measured by both Planck and SPT. Lloyd had already shown some of these maps this morning, so I'll run a slightly different version of it. So on the left is a small patch of the sky observed by SPD-SZ camera at 150 gigahertz. On the right, it's from Planck on the same patch of sky. And because of atmospheric fluctuations, we filter out the larger scale power. So we're going to apply the same filter on the Planck maps, and this is what you get. And we're going to beam smooth the SPT maps because we have higher resolution, so we want to remove those scales as well. So but the beam smooth SPT map looks like this. So when we make auto and cross power spectra from these two sets of maps, we find that they are consistent with each other statistically. So the red, the green, and the blue points are the band powers from the auto, the cross, and the auto of Planck inside the SPT patch. And as I mentioned, because Planck has lower resolution, so the error bars on the high L had grown. And that has implications of the angular scale range that we can compare of the two experiments. Now I'm going to show you comparisons of the cosmological parameters inferred from these two sets of band powers compared to the full sky Planck best fits. So this is a bit busy, so I'll walk you through what it is. So these are the lambda CDM six parameters, your on angular scale, matter density, baryon density, the primordial spectrum times e to the minus 2 tau being the optical density, and the tilt of the spectrum. And we also include the derived parameter Ishinot. So what the Ishinot parameter is most degenerate with matter density, and this is what we matter density in CMB. It's how we get the Ishinot inference, as Lloyd had mentioned this morning. So comparing the purple band, which is the Planck full sky best fit, to the Planck and patch inferred parameters, they are all statistically consistent with each other. So how about, and that's done with this range of angular scales from 650 to 2000. Now, now let's look at what the cross spectra gave us. So that's the green, and they're still statistically consistent, and the SPT only best fit for this set of parameters. So if you either you can compare each of these colored best fits with the full sky, or compare them across with each other in patch, they are all statistically consistent with each other. But you can say, okay, a lot of this inference of the parameters are dominated by the sample variance of the fact that we have a small sky patch. So how do we eliminate that? So we did a test of the parameter differences. So what we did is we simulate many versions of the sky, about 300 realization of the sky, make Planck-like in-patch van powers and SPT-like in-patch van powers and their cross power spectrum, and then calculate the difference of the inferred parameters for each of the set of simulations. So our parameter model is the difference band powers for the lambda CDM parameters, compute the parameter difference covariance given our simulations, and calculate the PTE. So the distribution here is from the set of simulations, and the line is where the data difference in parameters lie. So you can see that since if there are no systematics in either SPT nor Planck, in that patch, in the angular range that we consider, then the differences would come from noise fluctuations, because this test eliminates the sample variance. And the fact that the data line aligns with the simulation distribution means that this is evidence against systematics in either Planck in patch, in the SPT AZ patch, or SPT, in the common multiple range that we have investigated. So that's the conclusion we can draw from this test. So the question of, is it CMB systematics? If it is, then it has to be outside. It is very likely that it's outside the SPDSZ patch, and it is will be outside the common multiple range that we have investigated. There are some trends that is quite curious as we were working on this paper. One is, and that you can focus on this last column from the H0 column. So the maximum multiple range that we have considered so far is LF2000. So it's this range here. So if we include more higher L band powers and ask what the best fit of H0 is, for L max of 2500, we get a larger H0. And for even higher, up to 3,000, we get an even higher H0. So if you calculate the parameter difference of the red points and the blue points, it is still consistent. But then if you calculate PTE between this point or this model compared to the Planck, it has a on the low side PTE. So this is a very interesting trend of H0. While at this moment, we are not statistically powerful enough to differentiate whether this is a statistical fluke or this is real. So if this is real, how can we indicate whether it's new physics or not? So one way to look at it is to look at polarization, right? So the CMB is polarized at about a 10% level. So the polarization comes from very basic, that the Thomson scattering of free electrons by hotter and colder photons in the primordial fluid. So I'll get a polarized photon. So from the SPT pole receiver, we were able to make polarized measurements of the polarized CMB. So how does having polarization help? The idea is that this is the TT power spectrum from various with different experiments measurements, and the EE power spectrum that I've shown before. The idea is that the CMB for the temperature fluctuation where it peaks is where the photons are hottest or coldest that are coming out from the peaks or troughs or your matter density. However, for there to be polarization, the photons would actually be traveling from either from the hottest and coldest spot. So what EE, the polarization, is sensitive to is the gradient of the velocity of the photon field. So if you have stared at it enough, then where the trough of the TT spectrum is actually lines up with the EE. So they are probing slightly different dynamics of recombination. So the peaks in the EE are peakier, and there are a few, so parameter constraints could be tighter. Another reason that polarization is great is because foregrounds are less polarized than the CMB. What it means then is that we can use higher L, so smaller angular scale fluctuations in the EE to constrain lambda CDM. So now I'm going to show you the SPT pole E-mode map from the 500 square degree observation. This is a cool map at 150 gigahertz. It's moved by 4 arc minutes. It is by far, I believe, the deepest subscale polarization maps that are published. So from this map, we can ask the question, okay, so if we see the same trend of H0 and high L versus low L, what it means, okay? Would this be new physics? So say we also see high H0 with the small, when including small angular scales, it can be new physics, but it can also be systematics affecting both T and E in a similar way. But if we don't see similar trends in polarization, what does that mean? So it could be systematics, and either T or E or both, but affecting that differently. It can also be new physics, right? That's just observable only on T and E, right? So you have to become a bit more creative. So basically, like, if you adheres to the Occam's razor argument, you're like, you can't really tell anything if you don't see this trend in polarization. So what is the SPT pole H0 trend? So this is a posterior distribution, probability distribution of H0 for these four different subsection of our data. So the gold, the yellow is from Planck TT. And so this is what the low L side of SPT pole best fit is. So low L here is L below 1,000. So that's in good agreement with Planck TT. So the SPT pole high side lines up higher, but it's not that different. It's about 74 or so, 75. But they are still consistent with each other, so we can combine them. And the combined best fit H0 from SPT pole is 71 plus minus 2.1 kilometers per second per megaparsec. So we do see, similar to SPTSZ, there's this trend of increasing H0 when we include more small scales. So what we need is lower noise, small scale experiments to further investigate if this is real. So next generation or maybe upcoming results from Advanced ACT and SPT3G will be essential. So I'm going to shift gear a little bit and talk about late time cosmology from gravitational lensing. So late time here is the peak of the lensing kernel. So that's CMB lensing kernel, and that's about redshift of 2. That's really still high redshift for some of our astronomers here. So just quickly, lensing. Lensing of the CMB is quite straightforward. So the CMB was emitted at recombination. So as the photons traveled to us, their paths got deflected by the intervening gravitational potentials. So you can write down the lensed field at a certain position of the sky is the deflected field from the unlensed field. So the deflection can be described by the gradient of phi, the phi being the lensing potential, which is the weighted gravitational potential integrated along the line of sight. So the effect on the CMB map looks like this. So this is the unlensed T, E, and B mode map, B mode being here being no primordial B modes. So now I'm going to lens the maps. So you see that the temperature and isotropy fluctuations shift a bit, and also the E mode shift a bit. now some lensing demodes are generated. So in this talk, I'm not going to talk about the lensing demodes very much. So we'll look at the effects on TT and EE. So the magnification and demagnification at the map level, when you translate that to power spectrum, turns out to become smoothing of the peaks in the power spectrum. So the intuition here is that, say, you have hotter encoded spots, and as they go through these over and under densities, when they get magnified, right, then you calculate the power spectrum. The peak of this magnification will shift to lower L. So that's a larger angle of scale. And conversely, as they pass through under dense regions, they demagnify, and therefore they shift to a higher L in the power spectrum. So when we have a map, we calculate the power spectrum, we average over these magnification and demagnifications. So what we get in the power spectrum for TT and EE between lens and unlens is a net effect of the peak smoothing. So if you zoom in, say for example in this EE case, the unlensed power spectrum is peakier compared to the lensed to the lensed version. So Sylvia has talked quite a bit about the A-lens tension, and this is really curious, so I'm going to talk about it as well. So this is the A-lens, as we know, is not real lensing. It is an unphysical parameter that controls the amount of peaks moving we have in the power spectrum for TT. And what we find is that in Planck, the amount of peak smoothing is higher at about a 2.8 sigma level, depending on which likelihood you use, compared to A-lens equals 1 expectation. So one question we can ask is, right, if we directly instead measure the integrated gravitational potential, the lensing potential, from our lensed CMB map, would that lensing amplitude be consistent with lambda CDM expectation? Right. So how do we do that? We don't directly observe the matter overall under density. We observe lensed CMB map. So the way to do this is that is to leverage on the fact that lensing introduced off-diagonal correlations in the CMB map covariances. So now here, X is our T or E or B lensed maps, and L's and L primes at different angular scales. So imagine that you simulate many lensed skies, lensed by the same gravitational potential phi. So if you calculate the covariance from this set of simulations, then you'll find that there are off-diagonal covariance from this covariance that are directly proportional to the lensing field that you use to lens this set of maps. And these are functions of unlensed TEB spectra. So basically, we can use leverage these off-diagonal correlations to reconstruct the phi field itself. And we do that with sp tuple maps. And this is what the lensing convergence map look like. So the lensing convergence is directly related to the lensing potential, but it has like a nice physical interpretation where it's the surface mass density. What's really cool about this particular map is that these are high signal to noise measurement of lensing convergence along the line of sight. So if you point your telescope and if you can see actually unbiased mass estimates at this particular RAN deck, for example, this will be a true matter over density integrated along the line of sight. Unlike, for example, Planck's lensing reconstruction, where the noise level are a little higher, then you would be at this angular scale, you would be as likely to get a noise fluctuation or a real matter over and under density. So I'll stop nerding out about this map, but talk about the cosmological implications. So from this map, you can calculate the power spectrum and ask the amount of lensing power spectrum, is it consistent with lambda CDM? So the black points is the power spectrum from this lensing potential. And the background are a compilation of previous lensing measurements, including Planck's. So to do this test, then we can do the same trick we did with the two-point temperature peak smoothing exercise. So we can test this with the artificially scaling of this lensing spectrum and ask if our data prefers A lens equals 1. So let's prepare ourselves of what the result would tell us. by this cartoon schematic, right? So on the x-axis is the peak smoothing eight lens, and then on the y-axis is the lensing power spectrum scaling eight lens cross AL55, but this is the lensing spectrum scaling. If both of them are one, then it's lambda CDM rules is correct, right? Another option is that they are consistent with each other, right? So they can both be high, right? A lens can be 1.2, like what Planck see in peak smoothing, and also you require some extra factor to fit your lensing spectrum. What that means is that omega matter and A sub S is not a sufficient description of the amount of lensing that we observe. And similarly, if it is low. Now there are other options, right? So let's say the peak smoothing is consistent with one, right? But the lensing power spectrum scaling is high or low. So that can hint at the fact that maybe we have some systematics in the 4-point measurement. Conversely, if we are along this yellow axis, then maybe there is some systematics in the 2-point measurements, or these could be noise fluctuations or another kind of new physics that it's not as easy to, or you will require different ways to explain these two results. So from Planck, we already know that for this plot, the A lens is a bit high, right? And the phi scaling is consistent with one. How about with the SPT pool? We see similar results. So with the Planck TT as part of the chain, the peak smoothing A lens is high. The lensing power spectrum scaling is consistent with one. So this continues to be curious. It could be a tension. It could be consistency, just noise fluctuation. But this is what I find unsettling at times is that it's hard to come up with physical effects that smooth your 2-point measurements, but while your 4-point is still the amount of matter that you see in your map is consistent with lambda CDM expectation. One drive home point I'd like to bring up is that, let's say, model solutions that attempts to resolve this H0 crisis should not worsen other tensions. So this A lens could be one of the tensions. The SH could be one of the tensions. We need to take into account all the different data, what they prefer, and come up with the simplest model to resolve these tensions. And one final slide on the lensing power spectrum is a typical constraint that lensing is good at constraining is the sigma 8 omega matter to the 1/4. What we find is that from the SPT pool lensing spectrum, it is consistent with the Planck lensing results. The black circle contours is the inferred sigma 8 versus omega matter from Planck TT. So if you look at the actual sigma 8 omega matter to a quarter constraint from SPT pole lensing, we have about a 4% constraint. From Planck's full sky lensing, is about a 3% constraint. And the two are consistent with each other, so you can combine them and even improve this further. What I find this to be particularly cool is that our Planck lensing is measured over about 70% of the sky, whereas the SPT pole lensing is just on 1% of the sky. So what it means is that our lensing map is really, really deep compared to the Planck lensing map. So what's next? I'll have a quick slide on SPT 3G. It is currently observing projected H0 constraint with the completed survey will be comparable with Planck's. And our grad student at UChicago is working on the TEEE power spectrum. So this is a super preliminary EE spectrum from our first season of observation in 2018. So stay tuned with the results. So just a quick summary of this talk for the napping audience. So our SPTSZ temperature power spectrum is consistent with Planck in the same patch over the same angular scales. So if it is systematics, then it's likely outside our patch or the angular range that we have considered. SPTSZ and SPT Pol both show trends of higher H naught when smaller scales are included in parameter constraints. And so SPT3G's lower noise will be useful for investigating this trend. SPT Pol lensing amplitude is consistent with lambda CDM. And sigma 8 omega meter 2 a quarter is consistent with Planck lensing. So stay tuned for the parameters paper. Thank you.
I thought you might want to say something.
I thought you might want to say something too.
Okay. I had a question about the AL from the SPT 2-point, which you didn't mention in the talk, but was in a couple of the papers. So I remember the maybe Henning et al. Paper.
Yeah, both SPTSZ and SPT Pol is on the low side within 1-point some sigma of a length of 1.
Right. So there's not evidence from SPT 2-point of much tension in AL, but it's interesting that it goes the other way from Planck.
Yes. So if you compare, if you difference the Planck one on the full sky to the SPT one on the subpatch, that will be, the PTU could be low. We haven't done that calculation.
Yeah, it's like a 3 sigma difference.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm having trouble reconciling that with this comment about consistency of the spectra. I mean, I guess that's kind of saying that that is connected to the L greater than 2000 parameter shifts in SPT Pol.
Consistency of
or SPT,
the,
sorry.
Of which set to which set?
So when you go up to 2000, there's good consistency between Planck and SPT SC on that your patch. So is the preference, where is the preference for AL less than, I'm just trying to understand, like, where is the preference for AL less than 1 in SPT the same as those shifts, it's the same thing as the shifts in parameters above L 2000?
No, I think it actually kicks in at a lower L. So if you compare the full sky Planck constraint versus the subpatch results, so this one, right? So omega matter is a bit low already on the patch. So A lens, if you include A lens in this chain, it would also be low compared to the full sky Planck, for example.
Okay, I see. But it's not. Yeah, it's not high significance or anything. Sure.
I think that the main constraining power on the SPTSE A lens comes from extending I think that a lot of the information about A lens from SPTSE comes from L greater than 2000.
That's true.
And we just don't have the sensitivity to see what Planck's seeing. The sample variance is too large.
Consider the patch, you need to consider the sample variance because you have only one patch. But when you look at the whole sky, now since you are comparing the whole sky to a patch inside that sky, then cosmic variance should not be there.
So this test is we cut Planck to the subpatch, right?
Yeah, but when you compare the result for Planck from the full sky.
From the full sky, yeah.
The cosmic variance should not be there for this comparison. It should be there if you want to know what's the true underlying model from which our universe has been drawn, but it should not be there when you compare with this patch, is it?
The fact that we have a smaller measurement means that we have larger sample variance, right? So
but
the uncertainty.
With the full sky plan, in that measurement, there should not be cosmic variance.
Yeah, there's more, right? That's why the error bars are much larger in the subpatch compared to the full sky.
But when you compare with the Planck full sky, that's fit.
Yeah, so that's the purple bar.
Put cosmic variance in there.
Well, I think you're wrong.
Only for the patch, not for the full sky.
For the patch, you should be, but not for the full sky.
I'm confused.
Because you want to know what's the age in that realization. You don't want to know what's the age from the distribution from which our universe is one random realization.
So let me just check here. If I want to check for the degree of statistical consistency between what we're seeing in the patch and what we're having from Planck full sky, my claim is that we very much, you know, a large part of the expected fluctuations is sample variance.
In the patch, but not the cosmic variance from the full sky.
Absolutely.
So in that purple band, there is not cosmic variance, or is that the standard number that comes?
The purple band includes noise, right? So there's still
just
uncertainty.
No. There's also
the
sample
number of
variance.
Modes you have on the sky, right?
Well, I wanted to know what is the role of cosmic variance in that patch.
In the purple?
Not be
the That's just the. Depends on what question you're asking.
Asking about like cosmic variance, like in terms of age in this universe versus the CMB background, the CMB fluctuations that varies from realization to realization, which is causing the cosmic variance. I think we're going to be talking about two different cosmic variants.
Okay, so one is sample variance because of the patch, and another is cosmic variance because we only observe the observable universe.
Right.
For this comparison, we don't want cosmic variance. We only want sample variance in the patch.
I think you're talking about one number of age now, but we're measuring that using CMB fluctuations, which are drawn from a bigger realization. So there's cosmic variance in the
fluctuation. I was intimately involved in creating this plot, so I'll go ahead and say that the errors that are shown here do not answer the question of how statistically likely are the differences between these. Okay? So we haven't plotted what you need to answer, I think, the kind of question you're asking. We did not attempt to with this plot. Okay? These are just the posteriors for the parameters. That's all we've shown here. Okay?
So
now you're asking for something that we're not trying to give with this plot. That's my take on this.
So when you only have one experiment, you want to know the parameter that nature chose, then you need to put cosmic variance in it. But in this case, what matters are the parameters that are in the sky, in that realization of the sky.
You could, to a very good approximation, these are like samples from completely different universes. Okay? So there's very little correlation between whatever is kicked around, the posterior and the Planck full sky best fit, and whatever kicked around that from SPT. So actually that comparison is pretty straightforward. You just ignore that very small correlation and you do have what you need here.
I think basically the point is that the purple band is so much narrower than the other ones, the green, the blue and the red, that it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe the purple band can be a little smaller if you don't include the universe cosmic variance. But it doesn't matter in the end because you're dominated by the other one.
But you're right in that you're asking a slightly different question than what this plot is trying to show. Yeah.
The difficult thing to do is what Kimmy did show in the next thing, which was, you know, between these different patch results, what do you expect for the differences?
So can you say, if you compare high L, given the definition, L greater than 1,000 for Planck and for SPT, we know that Planck goes low and SPT
mm-hmm.
goes high.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, using all the observable sky both at, is that a curiosity or a tension? What is that number?
I think the error bars would get enlarged, so it would probably be more like a curiosity than a tension, but I don't have the exact number. We have very precise definition of what a curiosity and what a tension is now.
Any last comment or question for Kimmy? Okay, let's thank Kimmy again, and we'll go to our coffee break.